about Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Scott Richmond, and he'll be answering your most important questions on fly fishing the Deschutes River. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Scott a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately. We'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and your email address on the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website in about 48 hours after the show ends. So yeah, if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Scott Richmond about fly fishing the Deschutes River. Whether fishing for trout in the Rocky Mountains, chasing silver salmon in Alaska, or jumping tarpon in the Florida Keys, the Platte River Fly Shop online store has all the top brands you will need to gear up for your trip. They are Wyoming's largest Sims and Patagonia dealer, keeping a large variety of popular items in stock all year round. You might even find a great deal in their closeout section, from rods and reels to waders and boots. And if you're headed through Wyoming, make sure to put the Blue Ribbon North Platte River Tailwaters on your bucket list. Log on to WyomingFlyFishing.com today to check out their store or give them a call at 307-237-5997. That's 307-237-5997. And there you can chat with their experienced fly shop staff. Before we introduce Scott, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage, which is at askaboutflyfishing.com, and look for the link under Scott's section that says, click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a copy of Scott's book, Fishing Oregon's Deschutes River, courtesy of Scott Richmond, and we want to thank him for providing that tonight as a prize for our contest. Now, if you want to win Scott's book, here's how you got to do it. You got to be the first person to answer the question I ask at the end of the show, and the question is going to be something about that we talk about during the show, or maybe a two-part question, so be prepared. Submit your answer along with your name and your location text box on our homepage. And if you're the first one that answers it correctly, you'll win Scott's book. So listen closely and take notes, and hopefully you'll win. Our guest tonight is Scott Richmond. Scott is the award-winning author of 9 books on Oregon fly fishing, including Fishing Oregon's Deschutes River and Fishing in Oregon's Endless Season. In addition, he has written numerous magazine articles and hundreds of Internet articles. His novel, River in the Sun, 3 love stories wrapped around a thriller core, is set on the Deschutes River. Also known as Uncle Fuzzy, Scott is the creator and executive director of Westfly, the leading website for Western fly anglers. He is the past president of Northwest Outdoor Writers Association and is the recipient of the Enos Bradner Award, that organization's highest honor. Well, Scott, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Well, good to have you, and I'm sitting up here in a little snowstorm in Colorado. How's the weather out there?
Not too bad. I went out fishing on the Clackamas River this morning, and pushing up there in the mid-40s.
Not bad.
A little bit of sunshine. Yeah. Not bad.
Yeah. No rain, right?
No. We kind of got rid of that over the weekend. It rained aplenty.
Well, good. Well, we got lots of questions for you tonight, and I know the Deschutes is one of your loves out there, and so hopefully by the end of the show, we'll understand why it's your favorite rivers to fish. Why don't we start with, because we do have an international audience, and not everybody's familiar with where the Deschutes is, let's just start out by, why don't you just give us a little geography lesson on where the Deschutes is in relationship to the world and other big rivers in your area.
Okay. Well, the Deschutes, it's in the state of Oregon, so it puts it kind of up in the upper left corner of the United States, and it flows north and into the Columbia River. Now, the way Oregon is laid out, we have the Cascade Mountain Range rises up kind of in the western third of the state, and the Deschutes goes down the other side, the east side of the Cascades, which means that it's a desert river, and which it doesn't flow through sand dunes and, you know, camels and that sort of thing out there. It's just very dry, maybe 10, 11 inches of rain a year, and it flows through a deep canyon. It's the canyon's about 1,000 feet deep. In some areas, it's just quite spectacular. So it's sunny, it's dry, 0% humidity a lot of the time, which helps if you fall in the river. It means you dry out pretty quick. And it's a very big river. It's quite large. You cannot wade across it. What I'm talking about is really the lower 100 miles of the Deschutes, because there's other higher sections where the river's more like a spring creek, but the lower 100 miles is where most of the fishing action takes place.
And, now, that Cascade Range, is that the same range that goes up to Washington?
Correct, and right on up into British Columbia.
Yeah. I remember driving across from Spokane, you know, to Seattle, and I remember that drive because it's all desert up there, and then it just kind of drops off, and then you're like in rainforest area. It seems like
it's quite a spectacular change.
Yeah, yeah. So all that moisture bumps up against the mountains and dumps, and not much of it gets over the tops, I guess. Huh?
Yeah, that's correct. But there's a lot of snow melt, and that snow will flow down, you know, as it melts, will flow into the river and feed the Deschutes, and there's a lot of springs that add flow to the river also, underground water. So it's quite a large river.
Yeah, yeah, I heard, I did some reading, and you know, the flows, I guess, are very significant all year round. It never kind of peters out in the middle of the summer, does it?
No, it does not. Part of that has to do with the major dams at about the 100-mile point. They tend to smooth the flow out, but a lot of it also is the groundwater that gets added in from the springs and underground sources.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very consistent river all year long. It's actually clearer, unlike many rivers, it's clearer in the wintertime than it is in the summer.
And the when you say 100 miles up, is that the Pelton Dam?
That's correct. Yeah, the Pelton Round Butte project. And I say 100 miles up, that's from the confluence with the Columbia River.
Okay. Now, Ryan, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say that the river is about an hour and a half to two-hour drive from Portland, which is the largest city in Oregon.
Okay, so easy to get to for your travel.
Yes.
Yeah. Ryan wrote in and from Snoqualmie.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah.
Is the Deschutes actually three different rivers, upper, middle, or lower? And I guess first to preface that, when we just talked about 100 miles up or so, that's what we're going to be talking about, is everything below Pelton Dam tonight, pretty much.
Yeah, that focused primarily on that. That seems to be where most of the questions come from. And there is good fishing farther up, and Ryan is exactly right. There are three sections of the Deschutes. It begins at Little Lava Lake near the town of Bend and flows south, and it's just a spring creek. You could wade across it, and it flows along through nice, pretty pine forest and grassy area, and you just think it's what a cute little creek it is, and no hint of the huge river it will eventually become. And that's the upper Deschutes, and there is some good fishing up there. And then you get down, go through a couple of reservoirs, and below Wickiup Reservoir, that's the middle Deschutes, from Wickiup down to the dams and the Pelton Round Butte project. And at that point, the Deschutes is joined by two major tributaries, the Metolius and the Crooked Rivers, both of which are quite excellent fly fishing rivers in their own right. And then it becomes the lower Deschutes for 100 miles down to the confluence with the Columbia.
Okay, okay. So let's talk about, I guess it would be, you know, I'm going through your book, and you've got excellent maps in your book. And I'll tell you, I don't know. If I was going to go fish there, your book would be a must-have, just to know where things are on the river and how to navigate it, and the hatches and so forth. But excellent maps in there. So you kind of break your book down into several sections. Well, you break the lower section into several sections, I should say. And,
yes.
You start at Warm Springs, which is, what, just below Pelton?
That's correct. Yeah, that's just below the dam projects, and that's where most of the angling starts. There's a little bit just above there, but not much. And there's a boat ramp at Warm Springs, and then there's also a road that goes down to a camping and access area called Mecca Flat. And that upper section from Warm Springs to Trout Creek has excellent public access. On the east side of the river, there's a trail from Mecca Flat to Trout Creek, which is about 7.5 miles. You can ride a bicycle on a lot of it, a mountain bike. You can walk it. You can't drive it. On the other side of the river, the east or the west side, is the Warm Springs Indian Reservation. And if you have a permit, you can fish that side of the river as well, from Dry Creek to Trout Creek. And there's an access strip along there, and again, you could ride a bicycle or walk, but you cannot drive. And of course, you can also float that section because there's a boat ramp at Warm Springs and a takeout at Trout Creek. So that's a very good section of river. It's a lot of excellent trout water. In season, it's good steelhead fishing for hatchery steelhead in that part. There's not almost no wild fish in that section. And it's a good introduction to the river. It's a very easy float also. If you've got a pontoon boat or a drift boat, heck, you could almost do it in an inner tube if you're careful. But it's a highly accessible part of the river.
Now, you brought up a bunch of questions for me.
Okay.
You say you have to get a permit from the Warm Springs Indian Reservation there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you get permits like that? Are they hard to get?
They're not difficult to get. Anybody can get that permit. You go into major sporting goods stores, and you can get the Warm Springs permit.
Oh, so just where you get your fishing license, you can get that permit, basically.
Yeah, most places. Or you can go on. I think you can go online and check it out also.
Okay. Would you recommend that? I mean, this gives you more options, right?
It gives you more options. It's a good idea if you're floating the river, because then you can easily fish either side.
What is the, before I ask that question, you said you're not going to be wading across that river at any point. So I know we have some questions coming up about not able to fish from a boat and indicating that you must get out and wade. What's that situation? Does it apply to this area here, or is that another area?
At no point in the lower Deschutes can you fish from a boat. You use the boat to get from point A to point B. You anchor your boat or tie it to a tree, and you get out, and your feet have to be on the ground.
Wow. That's kind of an unusual regulation, isn't it?
Well, it is an unusual regulation, and especially for such a large river, you'd think, oh, gosh, you know, if we could get out there in the middle, think of all the fish we catch. Well, it's a regulation that was designed with conservation in mind, and to have a place where the fish could go as a refuge and live their lives without being bothered by anglers. Now, as anglers, we may find that slightly frustrating, but if you were a fish, I think you'd find it quite a good thing. And the trout population in the Deschutes is extremely healthy and abundant, so I think it's a regulation that works well.
Yeah, I'm just, all the places I've ever been, I've never experience. Usually it's you can't get out of your boat or touch the bottom, you know, like up in like Wyoming or in Colorado.
Right.
We have regulations like that where you're going through private property and you can't stop and, you know, you can't anchor and things like that.
So, well, a great deal of the lower Deschutes is public land. Mm-hmm. Of one form or another, either BLM land or state park, with the exception of the Indian Reservation, which is about 3.1 miles of riverbank on the west side of the river. And you can't get out anywhere along the Indian. I mean, you can stop the boat along the bank and get out of the boat, but you don't get out and walk on the land on the reservation, except for that little section where you have to have a permit. But, yeah, so much of the river is in public hands, and that makes
that's
one of the things that makes it such a great place to fish.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can stop and get out of the boat, and the not fishing from a boat is – I don't find that an onerous rule.
So on your map, yeah, I see, okay, secondary road and then trail. So it looks like the – really, is this a full day's float, would you say, from – Warm Springs to Trout Creek, is that a good day's fishing there?
That's a good day's fishing, and there are places to camp as well. I know people that will make a 3-day trip out of that section.
Oh, wow, cool.
So, and yeah. I've done overnight trips in there many times. A lot of people will. But you can do it in a day. If you can get toward the end of the season in November, you know, when you got less daylight and you can find yourself rowing pretty hard at the end if you dawdled a little at the top.
Okay. How many miles is that?
That's 9 miles from Warm Springs to Trout Creek.
Okay, yeah. And I noticed, there's trails on the east side, it looks like, all the way, and then most of the way from the west side, which is in the Indian Reservation. So using a trail bike is a method that some people use to fish this area.
Yes. Yeah. Not very many, frankly.
Okay.
But it does get used. You see a lot more boats than you see bikes.
Okay.
But I've bicycled up there in the fall for steelhead. It can be a good strategy.
Oh, that was the other question you brought up. As you said, hatchery steelhead, not many native or wild steelhead. Why is that?
Yeah, it's a good question. There's hatchery steelhead are stocked in the river. There are also hatchery fish from other river systems that will go into the Deschutes. Some of them will wander all the way, the whole length of the river, turn around and go back down to the Columbia and mosey on up into Idaho. So even if there were no hatchery steelhead stocked in the Deschutes, you'd still have hatchery steelhead in the Deschutes because they just come from other places. Now, nearly all of the wild fish spawn in some tributary other than that's below Trout Creek, which is a major spawning tributary. So almost all wild steelhead will have turned off into some tributary by the time they get to Trout Creek. So once you get above Trout Creek, very rare to catch a wild steelhead. They're almost all hatchery steelhead.
Okay.
Now the trout, on the other hand, are all wild. They're a wild native fish. There are no trout stocked in the Deschutes River.
Nice. Yeah. Always like that because it means they're stronger and fun to catch. Yeah. Okay, so, and now let's talk about the character of the river in this section. Does it maintain the same character from Warm Springs to the Columbia, or does it change character, and what's it like in this area?
Well, in that upper stretch, Warm Springs to Trout Creek, you're still flowing through a canyon. As you get below Trout Creek, it gets increasingly steeper sides, and the rock formations get more spectacular, and then as you get down closer to the Columbia, it's just a little bit more rounded, but you're still in a big, deep canyon. You know, it's 1,000 feet from either side down to the river. It's just how steep those sides might be. So it changes a little, but it's all variations on a theme. And it,
right.
It's a nice theme. It's a beautiful river to fish because of the canyon.
But basically a big, broad river. What about rapids? I hear stories about whitewater rafting on the Deschutes. Is that in a different, is that in the middle or upper areas? Or?
Well, the whole river is popular with rafters. Not so much the upper 9 miles, Warm Springs, Trout Creek, because that's very gentle. But once you get below Trout Creek, it's popular with the whitewater people. And there's a lot of people who come to the river strictly for the whitewater rafting, and they wouldn't even think of putting a fishing line in the river. So there are some major rapids. Once you get below Trout Creek, there's some very serious rapids where you have to have good, excellent whitewater boating skills. Whitehorse Rapids is probably the most famous in that section. It's a class 4 rapids, and if you enter correctly, you're going to do all right. If you get it wrong, well, you could die. So it's something to be taken very seriously.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about this section from Trout Creek, and in your book, you go Trout Creek to Maupin.
Yeah, Maupin's a little town right in the middle of the river.
Okay. So I take it that the upper section we just talked about, no problem with a drift boat or a rubber raft. But these lower sections, is it doable in a drift boat, or should you be using a rubber raft? Yeah, okay.
No, it's both raftable and good drift boat section.
So the one rapid you were just talking about, you just have to hit the tongue right, and it's a piece of cake, right? And otherwise,
yeah.
Any tricks to it?
I do not want to give instructions on how to run whitehorse rapids.
Okay.
trying to do that over the telephone and the internet is probably not a good plan.
Yeah.
I hear my lawyer screaming.
There's you know, I guess what I was, I've seen people bust boats in half on a flat section with no rapids, but there was the one rock in the middle of the river.
Well, that's right.
Somehow they got caught wrapped around it and broke their drift boat in half. You know, it's like, go figure, but so.
Well, sometimes the easy water is the hardest because you're not paying attention.
Exactly.
And take it for granted.
you can wreck
a boat anywhere.
Yeah. It was kind of funny because I was on the Upper Colorado by State Bridge or so, and I was looking at a guy's boat, and he had a hide boat, and I had a hide boat, and I looked at his boat, and I said, your boat looks a bit different. It doesn't look like it's stock, you know, like is it customized or something? And he said, no. He said, I let my friend row it one time, and he said, we both had a vested interest in the boat, but he didn't know how to row, and we were in a flat section, and somehow he got up against a rock, and it ended up breaking the boat in half. And
oh, dear.
So they swam to shore, and one of them said, the one said that knew how to row. He says, well, you're going to have to winch it out and get it out of there. And the other guy says, well, forget it. I don't even want my half anymore. And he says, really? He says, so you're giving it to me? And he says, yeah. He says, you can have my half. So guy went back to Denver, got winches and stuff, hauled it out, and then had somebody repair it and put the front end back on again. So don't let your novice friends row your boat. That's
good advice. And if you just bought your brand new boat and you're taking it down the river the first time, don't take it through Whitehorse Rapids. I heard somewhere, and I'm not quite sure if this is still accurate or not, but they lose on average 24 drift boats in Whitehorse every year.
Wow, that's significant.
That's significant. And the other thing I've heard from people who supposedly know these things is that nobody has ever drowned in the Deschutes who is wearing a properly fitted whitewater personal flotation device, life jacket.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
You know, there are ones with, you want the true whitewater life jacket that's got a flotation piece and behind the head, and it has to be properly fitted, and oh, by the way, you have to wear it.
Yeah.
Just about every drowning that happens on the river involves two things. One is a person not wearing a life jacket, and the other is excess alcohol. Now, there are exceptions to the alcohol part of that, but, don't
usually
drink when you're rowing the boat and wear your life jacket.
Yeah. It's in most cases, you almost have to try to drown, you know. It just seems that way, but people just aren't thinking, that's for sure, a lot of the times. So from Trout Creek and heading north towards Maupin. Okay, so we got a boat put in there, a boat ramp at Trout Creek. And then I'm looking at your map, and it's going pretty far before I see another boat ramp here.
Yeah, you go over 30 miles before you get to the next boat ramp.
Okay, so that's not that one-day trip there.
That is not a one-day trip, unless you're a heck of a, if you're a demon rower, you can make it in a day. But you're not going to be doing any fishing.
Fishing, right, yeah.
So, now, that is typically done as a 3 or 4 day trip. And if you want to really treat yourself to a great experience, hire a good fishing guide and do a 3 or 4 day trip through that section. That is the most scenic section of the river. The trout fishing is outstanding, and the steelhead fishing is pretty darn good, too.
Now, a couple of questions about that. The campgrounds, or there are a lot of campgrounds on your maps here. Those need to be reserved, or is it first come, first serve?
Good question. No, they are not reserved. First come, first serve. And, some of them are quite large and popular, but they always seem to be adequate.
Okay. And
there's also some fun little, one-tent campsites, too. If you're the first one there, you've got a lot of privacy.
Yeah. Now, do you have to pay fees for those sites?
No, but if you're boating, I'll answer that in two parts, yes and no. Okay. If you're boating, you have to have a boater's pass, and that covers, among other things, some maintenance on the campsites, things like somebody stocking and cleaning the outhouses. And if you're on the campsites that you can drive to, there are fees for those. It's
okay.
Very modest.
Okay. I do see access by road in some areas here, so you can get in there. Take it, hike up and down the river, and go from there. Right?
Yeah, because once you're in Maupin, which is kind of right at the center point of the river, there's an access road that goes 6 miles upstream, and another one that goes, if I say this right now, 25 miles downstream, and that's paved, mostly paved.
Mm-hmm.
No, excuse me, partially paved. About half of that's paved, and half of it is gravel, and sometimes quite rough gravel.
Okay. And I notice you have in your book here mile by mile description of the river and.
So that
acts as a guide for going down, I guess, if you're navigating.
Yeah, if you're drifting down the river, there's all the campsites are shown on there, including the GPS coordinates and how to recognize the campsite as you're coming up to it.
Good. That's very important because you do not want to miss your campsite.
No, because it may be several miles to the next one.
Yeah, and it might be getting dark. We've all been there probably. Question about, you said get a guide, for a three-day trip. How do the guides operate in that stretch of the river? Do you bring your own camping gear? Do they cook for you? Is it similar to a trip, or how do they work?
All the ones I know provide everything for you. I haven't used a guide very often on the Deschutes, but this last fall I treated myself. I took a friend who had never been steelheading before. He goes trout fishing about 5 or 6 times a year. And we hired a guide, Chris O'Donnell, River Runner Outfitters, who's a fellow I've known for quite a long time, nice young chap. And we did a 3-day trip from Trout Creek to Maupin. in the middle of October. Fishing mostly for steelhead. My friend fished for trout a little bit, but Chris provided everything. And that's typical of the guides. He set up the camp, he provided the cots, and we brought our own sleeping bags and our own fishing gear. But he also had fishing gear for anybody who needed it. And he did the cooking and provided the food and rowed the boat, told everybody where to fish, provided flies when needed. And you know, that's what the guides do.
Yeah, great, great.
They took good care of you, you know. My friend, you know, usually the steelhead are sometimes called the fish of 1,000 casts, and my friend got out of the boat and went to the first run, and I hadn't even gotten out of the boat, and his rod was already bent.
Oh, geez.
He hooked a steelhead on his fourth cast.
Yeah.
He'd never been spey fishing. The guide gave him a few good pointers, and bang, he was right onto a fish.
Wow.
Now, he lost it, and I thought, oh, geez, you know, that's too bad. 15 casts later, he hooked a second one.
Wow.
Landed that.
Very nice.
Now, I have to say it's not always like that.
Right. Yeah. Many times it is 1,000 casts. Huh? So.
Yeah.
Well, let me I need to take a quick break. I got so involved in talking to you that I forgot to take my break. So give me a few seconds here, and I'll be right back with you.
Okay.
Housatonic River Outfitters offers the finest in fly fishing products in Connecticut and fly fishing guides on the Housatonic, Farmington, and other waters. You have the option of wade fishing trips or drifting the river with their guides. In addition to the spectacular trout fishing, they offer guided fly fishing trips and spin fishing trips for warm water species. Please tour their website at www.dryflies.com to view the fishing products and guide services they offer in Connecticut and Massachusetts. They were the first fly shop in Connecticut to offer drift boat guide services and have the largest established guide service in New England. To learn more about Housatonic River Outfitters, go to www.dryflies.com, www.dryflies.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Scott Richmond about fly fishing the Deschutes River. If you'd like to ask Scott a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question, and we'll try to answer it, as many of them as possible on tonight's show. Well, Scott, I always ask my guests, you know, what's going on in your fly fishing world, so I know you're a prolific writer. What are you doing? Are you doing any writing, or are you just doing fishing right now?
Oh, well, yeah, a little bit of everything. I mean, I got out fishing today. That was nice. I'm working on a second work of fiction. I did a novel that came out in a couple of years ago, and so I've got a collection of short stories I'm working on. They're rather fish-centric, but not entirely, and so that's progressing. It takes a while. I've got the website, westfly.com, that keeps me fairly busy. A little bit of fishing here and there. I've got a new grandchild, so got trips back to the Midwest to see the grandchild.
Right.
Lots of different things.
Cool, cool. Now, tell us about Westfly and how that might help our listeners fishing in Oregon.
Okay, well, Westfly is a nonprofit website for Western fly anglers. There's some advertising. Money from the advertising supports the website, and everything that's left over goes off to fish conservation groups. Westfly has two major parts to it. One part is informational, where there's lots of information on major fisheries in four western states, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Montana. You'll find hatch charts, what's happening every month, river levels, guides, all sorts of information like that. And then there's another part of the website, which is a very active bulletin board, very active for Oregon and Idaho fly anglers, not so much so for Washington and Montana. But that's a very active portion of the website also. And it's a free website. Anybody can get on there and get the information. Right. Lots of things about entomology, hundreds of articles about fly fishing. So a lot there.
Great. Terrific. Westfly.com, right?
Westfly.com. All west, all fly.
Okay. Okay. Let's get back to the Deschutes here. So I'm looking at your book, I get to entering the Maupin area, and then there's all kinds of boat ramps, it's like.
Yes.
Starting at Nina. So that looks like an area that might be good for short day trips. Is that the case?
Exactly. Maupin is a center. There's lots of services in Maupin. I should say lots of services for a town of 500 people, but it's tourist-oriented, so there's two fly shops there, two excellent fly shops, lots of guides based out of Maupin, places where you could rent a raft, places to stay, a couple of restaurants, and lots of good drive-in access on the west side or the east side of the river. As you get below Maupin, you come to a major falls. It's impassable. It's not boatable. Shears Falls. And there's a bridge there. And shortly below that, the paved road becomes gravel. And it's 18 miles of gravel road to Max Canyon, at which point the road ends. And that's about, let's see, I think I remember this right, it's 20-some miles from the Columbia at that point.
Okay.
And there's some trails below there, and eventually you pick up another access road, which you can bicycle but not drive.
Okay.
So once you get to Max Canyon, you're boating.
Okay. Okay. Now you could start, let's see, there's a boat ramp at, looks like you could put in at Pine Tree or Beaver Tail, which are both below Shears Falls, is that the case?
Correct. That's
or
right.
Or Buck like too. So the Shears Falls is a definite physical barrier that either you stop above it or start below it kind of thing, right?
Exactly.
Okay. Okay. Now, is the river character in this in the Maupin area basically, and I'm not talking about the topography around the river, but basically the river is pretty much the same?
That's correct. As you get closer to the mouth of the river, particularly the last 15 miles, it's not as fast. It flows at a more moderate speed, and that is a very heavy-use area for steelheaders.
From where again?
From about the bottom 15 miles of the river.
Oh, okay. Moving to the next section then, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, up in the Maupin area, it's pretty much the same as everywhere else. Just the roads have more asphalt.
Yeah. Yeah. So then that bottom section you call Max Canyon to the Columbia, right?
That's right.
And that's the primary steelhead area?
Well, it's the heaviest use steelhead area because as the steelhead enter the river, which they begin coming in good numbers by mid-July, they keep coming up from the bottom of the river, and many of them will go all the way up to the very end, but it just takes them a while to get there. So beginning in mid-July, you get some pretty heavy pressure for the steelhead in the lower part of the river. You also have a lot of fish in that section, a lot of steelhead in that section, that are not Deschutes River fish. The Columbia River is a huge highway for anadromous fish like steelhead and salmon. And as they come up, headed for Idaho or Washington or other places in Oregon, the Deschutes is a shot of cool water for them. And the Columbia will be heating up. And so many of these fish will duck into the Deschutes because it's a better habitat for them. It's just a little more environmentally friendly. And they'll linger there for quite a long time sometimes until the Columbia River cools down a bit. So you get a lot of steelhead in that lower part of the Deschutes that are not actually Deschutes-bound fish. So you have a higher concentration of steelhead.
Interesting. Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah. Now, is there a point where you would say the trout fishing kind of peters off and is not as good as the upper portions in this lower section? Or?
Yeah, the farther down the river you go, especially once you get below Max Canyon, trout fishing is definitely decreasing. There's the highest numbers of trout are at the upper end in the Warm Springs to Trout Creek area, and there's not nearly as many trout as you get below Max Canyon. Now, that's not to say there aren't any, because right. You can still actually have some pretty good trout fishing down there because nobody's fishing for them. There's fewer fish, but a lot fewer anglers. Yeah. So sometimes your odds are a little better.
Yeah, I can see that, yeah. Okay, well, that kind of gives us a tour. I appreciate that. And I guess some takeaways there is for trout, stay up. For steelhead, especially during the early season, the lower portion might be the best place.
Yes.
Okay, we got some questions here. Let me kind of run through some of these. Let's see. I think we probably addressed this, but David in Humboldt County wrote in. He says, what would be the best section of the Deschutes to do a multi-day rafting fly fishing trip for trout? And I think that was that upper section, right?
Well, it depends on the boating skills of the person doing the trip. Warm Springs to Trout Creek is easy boating and very good trout fishing, and there's several excellent places to camp. So you could do a 2-day trip, even a 3-day trip, and have a pretty good time in that area. If you've got very good, excellent whitewater skills and you can get through something like White Horse Rapids, or if you want to hire a guide, Trout Creek to Maupin has some outstanding trout fishing, and as well as lots of good camping and wonderful scenery too.
Okay, and how many days could you spend in Trout Creek to Maupin?
Oh, I don't know, a couple of months. It's typically done as a 3 or 4 day trip.
Okay, good. Okay, I think we answered Phil's question about fishing from the boat. What other regulations? We talked about permits from the reservation. Are there any other, and we talked about camping. You said there is a boat permit that's required?
Yes, if you're boating the river, you need to get a boater's pass. And they're not expensive. And then you just tell them, I'm going to be on the river this day to this day. And they charge you accordingly, and they have the right to say, no, that section is too full right now, so you can't fish, you can't float it right now. But I've never had that problem myself.
Okay. And I think you answered this from Doug in Calgary. He says, does the Deschutes have areas readily accessible for visiting anglers without a boat or a guide? And I think you addressed that.
Yeah, the answer is yes. It's very, very accessible.
Yeah. Wading, DB in Escondido, California, is wading very limited. It sounds like all we can do is wade. I know there were some questions about, in fact, it may have been on the Internet. Oh, here it is. Chuck in El Dorado Hills on the Internet says, I fished the Deschutes River in the Maupin area and found the wading to be very difficult. Was that just me, or is the river best fished from a boat? No, you can't fish from a boat. But so talk to us about wading, whether it's from using a boat as transportation or walk-in. Is it a difficult place to wade?
Well, some places are very wadeable, and some places are very difficult to wade. Because it's a big river, there are places where you can step off the bank and be over your head. So I call that a hat floater. You disappear and there's nothing but your hat floating down the river. So there are a few sections like that. You've got to be a little careful. There are some very large rocks. Some places are just devilishly difficult to wade. There are alder trees along the banks that can make it tricky. On the other hand, there are some places that it's like, walking around in your bathtub. So you have to use some common sense. You have to look at it pretty carefully sometimes. Take a wading staff and feel ahead if you're not totally sure about what's coming up next. And be aware that you do have to be careful in some areas.
The Camillo in Westford, Massachusetts wrote in and said, is the Deschutes a year-round tributary? If so, what are the different approaches to fishing the river during each of the seasons? Can you break it out into seasons? Does that...
Yeah, that's an excellent question. The it is a year-round fishery, and there is some seasonal factors to that. And there is a seasonal closure from Warm Springs to the end of the Warm Springs Reservation, which is 31 miles. That section is closed from January 1st to the fourth Saturday in April. That's when the fourth Saturday in April it opens up. And the rest of the river is open year-round. But just that section that borders the Warm Springs Reservation has a seasonal closure January through most of April. Now, in December and January, it's fairly cold over there, and the water gets pretty cool. The trout are not nearly as active. So the trout fishing is pretty slow in December and January. By mid-February, it's warmed up a little bit. We have more daylight hours, and there's some excellent dry fly fishing February, March, and April for blue-winged olive hatches. It's a short hatch, but it's intense. And I've gone places and you get 15 or more fish in an hour and a half. You know, they're all 13 to 15-inch, very feisty, fat Deschutes River native trout. And then you get, as it gets warmer and the trout come off of their spawn, you've got the salmon fly hatch, which is very popular time on the river. And then there's catta season in July, end of June into July. And by the time that's starting to peter out, the steelhead are starting to come into the river. So you kind of go from the blue-winged olives through the salmon flies, through the caddis hatches, and then into the steelhead fishing. And it all starts winding down towards the end of the year. Now, you can actually do some pretty good steelhead fishing in November and December, even into the first couple of weeks of January. There are very few people out doing it then. The weather can be a little dicey. Trickiest part sometimes is the getting there. The drive can be the worst part. But you can pick up good steelhead right up to the middle of January.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We did get a question on the Internet. Mary Lilly in St. Paul, she says, how's the fishing on the Trout Creek Maupin stretch during August? I've been looking at guided trips, and they emphasize May to end of July.
Yeah, August, from about the last week of July through the second week of September, trout fishing is slow. It's mostly caught, I mean, the fish have been gorging themselves on salmon flies, caddis, pale morning duns, up to the end of, you know, very prolific hatches, up to almost the end of July. And the water's getting warm, there's lots of daylight, the fish are fat and full, and they just don't feel a need to go out and slam our flies. There's some good fishing, but it's kind of at the very first of the morning and the very end of the day, and there's a whole lot in between where you're sitting in camp looking for a shady place because it's probably 100 degrees, and waiting for the next time you can go out and catch some trout. So that is not the best time for trout fishing. It's not a bad time to do some steelheading on the lower portion of the river, closer to the Columbia, but it's not the best trout fishing.
So there you go, Mary. I think that's pretty clear. Bring your sun hat in August.
It gets hot in the canyon in summer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we experienced that out here in Colorado and of course, Utah and New Mexico, too, you know. And some of the rivers out here get pretty thin at that point, which isn't good for the fish or, you know, recovery of the fish either. But Phil wants to know, tell us why they call the rainbows red sides.
Good question, Phil. The red sides, there's a strain of rainbow trout. It's still a rainbow trout species, but it's a specific strain called red bands that are desert adapted. And they can tolerate higher water temperatures and greater alkalinity in the water. And the red sides are kind of a sort of like a strain of red band trout, as I understand it, but they're particularly adapted to the Deschutes River, and they got a fairly red, bright red streak down their sides, so that's why they call them red sides.
Okay. Brian in Dillsburg asked about water temperatures throughout the year. I think Scott just addressed all those, hopefully. If you have a follow-up, Brian, let me know. Chuck, this is on the Internet, too. El Dorado Hills, does the Deschutes River in the Redmond area provide excellent fishing? We didn't talk about a Redmond area.
Redmond is the middle Deschutes, and in the summertime they take a lot of water out of that section of the river for irrigation, for agriculture in central Oregon. And so that section will start to go a little on the thin side. The Redmond area and near town of Terrebonne is not a bad place for winter fishing and a little bit of spring fishing on the middle Deschutes. But it's not a terribly good place in the summer because it does go thin and get warm. You'll find brown trout in that section as well as rainbows.
Oh, wow. Okay. Greg in California, he says, I know fish show up earlier around the mouth than later up around Maupin. He must be talking about steelhead. If we were to come for a two-week period this September or October, which 2 weeks would give us the best chances of hooking a fish based on historic trends? It would be September 23rd between 3 and 4 in the afternoon, wouldn't it be?
Yeah.
just
at River Mile 63.2.
Yeah.
All right. Of course, the best time to go fishing is any time you can go. But if you're after steelhead, there aren't as many fish above Maupin in September as there will be in October. And if you're going in September, a person could stay in the Maupin area, fish from the access roads, float different sections of the river, like from Beaver Tail to Max Canyon or Pine Tree to Beaver Tail. Those are all good floats in September and good times for multi-day trips. So there are people who will stay in Maupin. There's a nice city park in the town of Maupin for RVs. There are a number of campgrounds as well, but you have to bring your own water and everything. It is a desert. So that's a good option. October, time you get into mid-October, the Trout Creek to Maupin section can be fairly good for steelhead. That's when I was up there this year. It was, October 17th we started. And they were just starting to catch steelhead in good numbers in that section at that time. We had a great trip.
Mm-hmm. Question just came in on the Internet. Brian Green, Dillsburg, he says, what's the average depth of the river in the lower section?
Oh, boy. There are places where the river is probably 50 feet deep, but generally not. It varies so much, that's a very hard question to answer.
Okay. But no wading across at any point.
You are not going to walk across the river.
Yeah.
I had a friend who was a good lake fisherman, didn't know diddly squat about rivers, and he tried to walk across at one point, and he floated.
He took a swim, huh?
He took a swim.
Yeah.
He thought he was going to die, but he didn't. He grabbed hold of a tree branch and swung himself out.
Oh, wow. Ryan in Snoqualmie, which section do you believe provides the greatest opportunities for salmon fly hatch, and do you have a specific go-to dry pattern when fishing the salmon hatch? And when is the salmon hatch again? I know you mentioned it earlier, but...
Yeah, salmon fly hatch, it varies a little bit depending on the water temperature and the air temperature, so there's some variation from one year to the next. But and it starts at the very bottom of the river, and works its way up, because the farther the rivers flow, the warmer the water gets. So because the hatch is water temperature dependent. It starts low and works its way up. Usually by second week of May, you're getting good numbers of adult salmon flies, and then a couple weeks after that, the golden stone flies. From Warm Springs down to White Horse Rapids, that starts to trickle off a little bit below White Horse, but you can go all the way down to Maupin. I think if you showed up in second or third week of May in the Maupin area and fished around there or started drifting from farther upstream, you'd have pretty good experience with the salmon fly hatch. And it will go on for, hard to say how long it goes on. You know, it varies from one year to the next, but right, it can go on through most of June.
Mm-hmm. And he had asked about a particular pattern that you prefer.
Yes. I am particularly fond of the Clark's stone fly, and I have very specific reasons for that. It's very easy to tie. It's only four materials. It floats low and has a low profile. I can fish it on a 5X tippet, and it casts reasonably accurately. Now, if you were fishing from a boat, which you can do in, well, almost anywhere else, a good foam body fly is a good choice because you just chuck that thing out there and then you float along the river in your boat and you want a fly that's going to stay afloat for a long time. But because that's not an option on the Deschutes, accurate casting, I think, it would be a major advantage. You want to be able to hit the little current seams around boulders and the places where the fish are going to be waiting under the trees. So I like a fly that casts accurately, and also a fly that if I leave it hanging in the tree, I don't feel too bad because I can tie another one in just a few minutes. So that's why I favor the Clark stone. It also works darn well. So.
Okay. Need to take another quick break here, but we'll be right back and finish up with the Deschutes. Have you ever dreamed about the classic actions of bamboo fly rods? Did you know that it's possible for you to make your own bamboo fly rods? With the help of Power Fibers online magazine, you can do just that. Power Fibers is a magazine dedicated to making bamboo fly rods and telling the stories about bamboo through the ages. From rod making techniques to stories about fishing bamboo rods to rod maker profiles to classic tapers, Power Fibers has it all. Visit their website, at www.powerfibers.com. That's www.powerfibers.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Scott Richmond about fly fishing the Deschutes. If you'd like to ask Scott a question, use that text box on our homepage and ask away. We've only got a few minutes left, so hurry up. Okay, hopefully this will be a quick answer because I don't know what this is all about, but Dick Fondon and Walla Walla wrote in and wanted to know about, do you think the ODFW, which is Oregon?
Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Yeah, and various tribes should just continue hatchery operations for steelhead and salmon in Oregon. Is that some controversy that's out there? Or?
Well, yeah, we could spend several hours on that question.
Okay.
And get some pretty heated debate. I am very much in favor of wild native fish and for regulations that favor the wild native fish. And I said before, the Deschutes, all the trout are wild and native, but the steelhead are not. Now, so the question really comes down to should they or will they? And the answer is they will not discontinue hatchery operations for lots of reasons having to do with economics and politics and not too much with biology.
Mm-hmm. So. Okay, let's leave it at that.
Yeah, probably best to leave it at that.
Okay, let's talk about equipment real quick. I know we're running out of time, mm-hmm. and I'm going to try to cram a bunch in here. Rods, what weight rods would you suggest for the Deschutes for trout?
I favor a 5-weight rod on the Deschutes. I've used 3-weight rods to some good effect. They're very 3-weight works very well for back eddy fishing where you want a nice soft presentation. The problem is the Deschutes can be very windy, and the 3-weight can die in a hurry if you're casting into a 20-mile-an-hour wind. So I use a 5-weight. It's a good all-around trout rod suited to the size of the fish and the kind of flies and conditions you'll be fishing under. Now, for steelhead.
Yeah.
Excuse me?
Let's just stick with trout for a minute and
okay.
The steelhead, okay?
Okay?
Any need for sinking or sink tip lines for the trout? Or?
Not for the trout.
Okay. And what about leader and tippet material? Are they tippet shy? What do you use for leader?
Well, in the summertime, the river gets murkier than it is in the winter because there's more algae in the river. And I use a 5X tippet.
Okay.
I typically, for my leaders, I'll use for dry fly fishing and nymphs near the surface, I'll be using a 11 to 12 foot leader tapered to 5X.
Even now, for the dry and emergency?
For the dries. If I'm fishing a nymph down on the bottom, I will generally be using a 2 or 3X tippet.
Oh, wow. That's pretty hefty stuff.
Well, you're down a little farther, and you're more likely to get tangled up with a rock.
Yeah. Okay, and then for steelhead, what do you suggest for rods?
For a single-handed rod, a 7-weight rod is adequate, a 7 or 8-weight rod, and usually about a 9-foot is a good choice. For a two-handed or spay rod, what most anglers use now are 7-weight rods in the 12.5 to 13-foot length, and many are using 6-weight spay rods now. They're very handy and easy to use. 20 years ago, I used a 10-weight, 15-foot spay rod. I mean, what an awful club that was. But the equipment is so good now that a good 7-weight, 13-foot, or 12.5-foot rod is just dandy for summer steelhead.
Okay. And what about need for sink tip or sinking lines for the steelhead?
Floating line most of the summer. You might use a sink tip if you want to fish in the middle of the day when the fish are a little less reluctant to come up, when the sun's brighter. As the water gets cooler, a type 3 and possibly even a type 6 sink tip is useful. By the time you get into mid-October, and the water temperature is getting down under 50 degrees, you might think more about using a sink tip.
Okay. Food and flies, let's talk about that for a minute. Is there, Joe from Houston, Texas, want to know, is there a particular hatch that the Deschutes is most known for?
Well, it's has the salmon fly hatch is famous. The caddis hatches are pretty famous also. I think any river that has a large salmon fly hatch is famous for its salmon fly hatch. But, yeah, that's a big one.
Okay. And you had mentioned blue-wing olive in the springtime is incredible. Caddis, when's the primary caddis hatches occur?
Well, caddis are doing something close to 12 months of the year. But the most intense hatches are late June through July. That's the height of the caddis season. Mm-hmm. And there's pretty good caddis hatches going on in the fall as well.
Any other primary hatches that you would highlight?
Well, let's see. The blue-winged olives, the salmon flies, pale morning duns, pale evening duns, various species of caddis. The October caddis is a major fall event, but that's mostly, most of the action is on pupa patterns, fish down near the bottom, and not on dry flies. So, yeah,
and I noticed you have
those are the main ones. Yeah.
You have in your book a very extensive hatch chart here by month and insect and so forth. So, that's pretty incredible. That's another reason to get your book.
Right. Available at Amazon.com. That's a good source
for
your local or your fly shop if you're in Oregon.
Yeah, Fishing Oregon's Deschutes River. Let's see here. Scott Nelson in Portland, Oregon asks about what do you think of fishing non-aquatic insect patterns for trout on the lower Deschutes? I'm referring to streamers, crawdads, terrestrial tractor flies, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Hello, Scott, if you're out there. I know Scott.
I've
fished with him on the coast one time. It's a good question. My experience, now, I know the Deschutes trout eat a lot of crayfish or crawdads, and I'm sure, and there's a lot of sculpins in the river also, so I'm sure that the larger trout are out there eating sculpins. I've never done particularly well with streamers on the Deschutes. I've fished muddler minnows and picked up a few fish, but not too many. Mostly I've just picked them up on the aquatics. It's not a big hopper river, you know, like you get back there in the Intermountain West, and you get a lot of grasshoppers going on and ants and beetles and other terrestrials. I've never found that to be a big factor on the Deschutes, at least in my experience. I'm sure there's somebody who would counter that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of, you know, if you fish streamers every day, you're probably going to do pretty good because you fish streamers every day, you know. But, yeah, it's where your confidence is, too.
Yeah, my experience, you mostly catch the fish on the fly you've got tied on.
Right, exactly. you said it better than I did. Joe in Houston wants to know, you know, what's a good fly to use? Well, that's kind of a broad question, but can you tell us about maybe some of your favorite trout flies in general that, you know, that you like your go-to wouldn't be without flies?
I've definitely got my flies I don't want to be without, and it depends on what time of year you're going, but I don't care where you're going and who you are, an angler should always have a stash of size 12 to size 18 parachute atoms. I don't care what
yep.
river you're on. You got to have that in your box.
That's
and
right.
right next to them, you want a stash of size 12 to size 18 pheasant tail nymphs. So, you know, I don't leave home without them.
Yeah.
That's my thing. For the salmon fly hatch, I mentioned the Clark stone fly. I like that with the orange body for the salmon flies and the yellow body for the golden stone flies. Elk hair, the ultimately venerable elk hair caddis, does just dandy on the Deschutes during the caddis season. If you fish the Deschutes from July through September, you'd do very well if the only fly in your box was a size 14 tan elk hair caddis. I mean, you might miss a few opportunities, but you, in general, you do pretty well. I like to have soft tackles. Anytime I'm on a caddis-rich river, I like to have soft tackles. Let's see, what am I leaving out there? Pale morning duns, size 18 pale morning duns for that time of year. And, of course, the stonefly nymphs. You need the big, black, double bead rubber leg sink right down to the bottom stonefly nymph. the big uglies. You meet a bunch of big uglies. I don't fish those during the spawning season because I don't like to pick up spawning fish. I want fish that are post-spawn or pre-spawn or no-spawn, and I'll stick to dry flies. But pretty much any other time of the year, the stonefly nymphs are pretty effective if you're a nympher. I always team it with another nymph, a smaller nymph.
Yeah, let's talk about that in a second. One more thing about flies. What about steelhead flies? You have some preferences there, I know.
Yeah, I'm fairly traditional on the steelhead flies. The traditional green butt skunks, the freight train, which is a Randall Kaufman pattern, those are kind of my go-to summer steelhead flies. There's a Brian Silby pattern, the Copper Tops, that's a good fall pattern. Steelhead, you know, somebody said, and I think it was John Hazel, who has the fly shop and guide service on the river, said if they're in the right mood, they'll eat your car keys. So it's more a question of putting a fly in front of the fish, you know, and finding a willing fish more than fly pattern. If I'm using a sink tip line, I'll go with something a little bigger and wigglier and wavier in the water. But
okay.
Traditional floating line stuff, green butts, freight trains. There's a fly called a streetwalker, Gordon Nash pattern. Looks really good under low light.
Mm-hmm. I've got a question here. I don't know who it's from. But they wrote in saying, I was feebly swinging wet fly streamers on the lower Deschutes last March, while I saw somebody collecting steelhead using nymphs in the shallows. I wasn't rigged for this, but it seems like I should have been. Can you elaborate on what methods he may have been using so well?
Okay, you can nymph for steelhead, and you can be very effective doing that on the Deschutes. And now you get into sort of a religious question of the swingers versus the nymphers. That's a tricky question on the river. It has nothing to do with whether it's effective or illegal or immoral or fattening. It's there are people who only want to swing flies and people who might want to use nymphing tactics as well. And that's what the guy was probably seeing, was people using nymphs.
But it can be effective.
So. It can be very effective, especially if you're out in the water's really cold, like say it's November and you're getting ice in the guides and it's the water temperature is 39 degrees. You're not going to pick up very many fish on swinging a fly. They're just not going to move. But you can pick them up using an indicator and nymphing down near the bottom. Mm-hmm. My novel, actually, the last chapter is a kind of a tongue-in-cheek contest between rival fishing guides of nymphing versus swinging flies. So,
yeah, it's kind of like nymphing versus dry fly fishing, too. There's opinions about that as well, so for trout.
Well, yeah, I know people who very eagerly nymph for trout who would never think of doing it for steelhead.
Mm. Oh.
It has more to do with philosophy than anything.
Okay. You mentioned in your, and we're running out of time here, but we do have like 5 minutes left here. You talk about five different presentations that you like in your book. Can you kind of run through those, maybe talk a little bit about each one?
Yeah, this is for trout presentations.
Right.
For nymphing, I'll use a deep nymph on the bottom with an indicator. And it's very important to have enough slack in the line so that the fly will reach the bottom and be fishing well, and then to instantly tighten up as soon as something happens to the indicator. But I also do a lot of nymphing without using the indicator, where you've just got a tight line and you're fishing fairly close to you, and you're just kind of high-sticking it as it goes by you. That can be extremely effective, and it's amazing how close to you will pick up fish. One of the biggest trout, bona fide trout, not a steelhead, that I ever caught in the Deschutes was done with tight line nymphing. That fish was probably 3 feet from my boots when I picked him up. So it's amazing how well that works. And then, of course, there's just an upstream dry fly. And a downstream dry fly can be fairly effective if you're trying to get under overhanging alder branches near the bank. A lot of trout action on the Deschutes happens near the bank. The caddis fishing and the salmon fly, it's pretty close to shore usually.
Well, I would imagine that because the river's so big and deep that most fish aren't out in the super deep areas, I wouldn't think.
Well, and the bugs are close to shore.
The
salmon flies and the caddis are hanging out in the vegetation.
Right.
So, and then the fifth presentation is a wet fly swing where you just quarter about 45 degree angle downstream, throw in an upstream mend, and let the fly swing across. Using a soft hackle fly or similar pattern. And that can be very effective on the Deschutes. It's a great tactic if you're taking somebody out who's a beginner because they don't have to detect the strike. They're just, it's on a tight line and the fish basically hook themselves.
Yeah, now, do you use, any kind of like, hopper dropper kind of rigs? Or fly rigs, is that allowed in Oregon?
Yes, I rarely fish just a single fly. If I'm fishing nymphs, I've usually got a big one and a little one. If I'm fishing dry flies, I often will do a dry fly with a small nymph hanging off the back on a 18 to 24 inch dropper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And then steelhead tactics. pretty much swing or nymphing? Or are those the two main?
Yeah, it's swinging or nymphing. And it's with steelhead, it's less a question of tactics and more about picking the right water.
Okay. Any other tips for steelhead that you might throw away?
It takes a strong arm and a mind tolerant of tedium. Because sometimes it's a long ways between fish, or what? Not. You know, like my friend who had, you know, his first two steelhead in his first 20 casts. So,
is there any secret at all? I mean, is if you've got two guys out, I mean, I've been fishing with guys, you know, trout fishing, and we'll be standing next to each other, and one guy will be just killing it, you know, and the other person can't buy a fish. Does that ever happen with steelhead fishing, or is it pretty much the same for everybody?
I think that happens more often with trout fishing. And with steelhead, the person who's a better caster and a more consistent presenter is going to do better. Usually, the person who's picking up the most fish knows the water so well that he knows the most productive areas. It's a numbers game. You're working the probabilities. You want to cover a lot of water and find that willing fish who wants to be a player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Persistence, huh? Persistence.
Persistence, patience, and above all, faith.
Faith.
The right thing in the right place at the right time, and eventually it will happen.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. Well, we're out of time here. Scott, so I need to wind things up. Stick with me because we're going to do some giveaways, including a little contest for your book. And so we'll be giving away a one-year membership for the Federation of Fly Fishers, a one-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, and a copy of Scott's book, Fishing Oregon's Deschutes River. And thanks to Scott for offering that up tonight. And since most of you won't be winning it, like Scott said, Amazon.com or your local fly shop, ask them for it. I think it'd be invaluable if you're going to go fish the Deschutes with the hatch charts and the river maps, that, you know, must-haves. Okay, one more thing here. Family Ties, that's Ties, T-Y-E-S. Family Ties is an organization which uses a shared interest in fly fishing and fly tying to enhance youth development and family relationships. They utilize resources in schools, communities, and businesses, and they invite your participation. Go to their website, www.familyties.com. That's family and then T-Y-E-S.com, where family ties, where every fish is a trophy and every kid is a hero. Just a quick reminder to everyone, before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find the link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show that says, what did you think of the show? Just click on the link and leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. Okay, let's give away some prizes here. The winners from our drawings are randomly selected from our show's registration database. If you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late, but make sure you do so for our next show. You don't want to miss your chance at the incredible prizes we have to offer. If you are the lucky winner, we'll contact you after the show via email and ask you for information so that we can get your prize out to you. So first, we'll give away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. And to learn more about the Federation, go to fedflyfishers.org. Fedflyfishers.org. Great organization to support, be part of. And so check them out. And let's see here. Let me fire up the database here. And our first winner is Ken Browerman. Ken Browerman, congratulations, Colorado. So congratulations, Ken. You are the winner of that one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. So, like I said, we'll contact you after the show and get you hooked up. Now, the second thing we're going to give away is a one-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, courtesy of Amato Books. Find out more about the books and periodicals Amato has to offer. Go to amatobooks.com, amatobooks.com. And let's see here. Chuck Pigos, or Pigos in Ohio. So congratulations, Chuck. And you'll be getting that one-year subscription to the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. So congrats to you. And again, we'll contact you after the show. Okay, let's give away Sophia Scott's book, Fishing Oregon's Deschutes River, Complete Guide to Fly Fishing and Camping on the River. And I think that's important, too. It really is a complete guide to the river. Let's see here. Okay, I got to clear my queue here. Now, to win this, got to type in your answer on the text box on our homepage. Be sure to put your name and location in there as well. And this is going to be kind of an unusual question that might be hard, but we'll see. Sometimes my questions are too easy. There is... there is a rapid on the river that Scott said they lose. What, how many boats every year, Scott? 15 or 20 or something like that?
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
What's the name of that rapid? Because you better know the name if you're going to float the river because you don't want to go through it. So what's the name of those rapids? Let's see if we've got any winners. Oh, Treg again. Treg Owings in Moscow, Idaho, just won a book. It's White Horse, isn't it, Scott?
That's right.
That's right. Treg has probably won more stuff off my shows than anybody I know. He pays attention, and he's got a sharp mind, and he can type fast. Treg, you got it. And guess what? My other person that wins all the time, Dean Wormell, you were second. you missed Treg by about probably a fraction of a second, I suppose. In fact, let's see here. 1 hour. Oh, no, that doesn't really tell me the difference in seconds. I thought it was going to tell me the difference in seconds. But anyway. Oh, yeah, yeah. Dean, you missed it by... 6 seconds. 6 seconds, Dean. You got to speed it up, Dean. So, Treg, you have competition. That was pretty darn close. So, okay, well, Treg, again, send me your address. You know the routine, and we'll get that over to Scott, and he'll get you out a book. Treg, that's not too far away from you. You better go fishing over there. So, congratulations, and... thanks for playing, guys and gals. Well, Scott, hey, we really appreciate you being on the show tonight. It was fun talking to you. It just screamed by the time that went by, and you made it easy on me, which I always love. So I really appreciate you being on the show.
My pleasure.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll see you out in your neck of the woods sometime and fish that river. It sounds exciting. Well, hopefully all of you have found our archive on our website. If you haven't, there's a couple of links on it. There's one at the bottom of every page. Go to the archive. We have over 200 shows now. Our last show was the 200th show. It's searched by keyword phrase, by fish, by river, by lake, and see what you find. Lots of just incredible information from our guests like Scott Richmond tonight. So check it out. Our next broadcast will be on February 4th, and on that show, I'm going to interview Matt Austin, and the topic for the show will be Southern California carp. Matt guides fly fishers for all kinds of, I'm sorry, wrong show. it's not going to be Matt. It is going to be Kirk Webb, and we're going to be doing a show on the lower Colorado in the area between Glenwood Springs and Grand Junction, Colorado. And we're going to be talking about trout and carp in that area. It's a fishery where you can get both in the western part of Colorado. So sorry I got you messed up there. The show after that will be Matt Austin and Southern California carp. So we're going to be talking about carp for the next two shows in one way, shape, or form. So gear up for that. And and we'll see you on those shows. I'd like to thank the Federation of Fly Fishers, the Motto Books, Platte River Fly Shop, Housatonic River Outfitters, and Tar Fibers Online Magazine for sponsoring our show tonight. And don't forget to visit our website, askaboutflyfishing.com, and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. I hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone.